Well, next, we're going to hear from singer-songwriter Alex Deason. You may know him from the rock group The Damwells, but he is the songwriting behind The Damwells, and he has a lot to say about both his songwriting, how he feels about the world, and the music industry. So we're going to hear from him next.
I'm going to play one that's going to be on the new Damwells record that's coming out March 1st. The song is called The Great Unknown.
Heard the news today, oh boy. The broken heart still unemployed. It's looking for a kickstart tonight. But the world keeps spinning round and it won't go down. Not without a fight. So I will drive you home. Though we're both drunk and stoned, just follow the stars and speeding red cars into the great unknown. Oh, beautiful for spacious skies. What a dismal soundtrack of our lives. Have we run out of the good years? No, we are not afraid. We're just underpaid and waiting for the world to disappear. So I will drive you home. Though we're both drunk and stoned, just follow the stars and speeding red cars into the great unknown. Oh, unseen Lord, tell me what you want from me. And I'll see what I can do about it. Oh, unseen Lord, aren't your hands awfully full with Jesus Christ, Hare Krishna, Maimonides? Oh, I wish you well. I love you, but it's complicated. I will drive you home. Though we're both drunk and stoned, just follow the stars and speeding red cars into the great unknown. I will drive you home. Though we're both drunk and stoned, just follow the stars and speeding red cars into the great unknown. Into the great unknown.
Here on Capital Americana. That song was The Great Unknown. And I have to ask,
yes.
You're not, I'm assuming you're not endorsing driving while intoxicated.
Good that you brought that up.
So is that a metaphor for something you're writing?
It's all a metaphor, isn't it? Yeah. My mother actually said to me one time we were driving in the car, she was listening to some rough mixes from the record. And, you know, I'm always kind of watching and waiting with bated breath while my mother or any family member listens to music or is reading a selection of a story or something like that I've written, just waiting for them, like trying to see if maybe some twitches will give away what they think. And the song came to an end and I was like, so? And she's like, you should maybe put like something on the record that says that you don't endorse drinking and driving. And I was like, that's ridiculous. Ugh. And then my wife was like, actually, that's probably not a bad idea. So maybe we will put a sticker on there or something. Yeah, no, it's all just, it's all just metaphor. It's like the song is totally not about even driving someone home. It's like, just about trying to figure out where you're going. And though you may not even know where you're going or where you're headed, that, if we do it together, kind of, maybe we'll get somewhere, you know, kind mm-hmm. of thing. So, you know, that's what I mean.
Thanks.
Yeah, sure.
Well, Capital Americana is a relatively new show on WAMU's Bluegrass Country, so many of our listeners are not familiar with the Damwells mm-hmm. And the history of the band. Could you elaborate about on that a little bit and how
yeah.
you guys formed?
The band started in around the turn of this century, and we formed in Brooklyn, New York. We were four guys, and we started touring pretty much immediately. We got great opportunities to tour with bands like Cheap Trick and Old 97s and... a slew of other great acts, the Twilight Singers, and we eventually found our way onto Epic Records. We made a record for Epic, Bastards of the Beat, which was actually recorded in this Manhattan mini storage and in my bedroom in Brooklyn, and then we signed to Epic, and they re-released it as is, which was pretty cool. You know, we didn't have to go in and make any changes. And then we made another record for Epic, and then after that record was finished, we were dropped from the label, and then the record was licensed to Rounder Records, and then we were on Rounder Records for a while. And now we're just signed with Pledge Music Recordings, which is essentially we were able to fund this new record through a pledge drive on this website called Pledge Music, which is this really innovative site where musicians and fans can connect directly, and fans can... donate money, but it's not really donation because they get exclusives. They get, you know, B-sides or, you know, access to blogs and video and photos and all kinds of, you know, stuff that's not out in the public. And so we were able to raise enough money to make this record. And then Pledge started a record label, and they said that they would license the record from us. We would get a pretty big cut of the money. You know, it's not 50-50. It's way more in our favor, which is really progressive. So we said, yeah. And now the record's coming out in March.
Well, that's exciting. Do you have a title for it yet?
Yeah, it's called No One Listens to the Band Anymore.
Oh.
Which I have to preface by saying, I don't mean that no one listens to my band anymore. Uh-huh. I just mean that it's like, you know, just like the drinking and driving thing. It's all just a metaphor, you know, that people stand around in the room and they're not even really listening to the music. And that's kind of sad. So, I don't know.
You know, I noticed that many of your lyrics have a kind of like universal emotional ideas. And is that something you strive for to connect with the listener? Or is that just something that comes out?
It's just something that comes out. I think that when I was getting my master's degree, I took a class with this guy named Charles D'Ambrosio, who's like probably one of the most amazing writers in the world, definitely the best American short story writer. But he said, there's only like three ideas in the world, and so you're lucky if you can actually just get a grip of one. And you kind of just circle around that idea your whole life in many different ways. So I think that for me, I don't even know what it is, the idea is. I mean, I think I have a clearer picture of it now than when I was 21. But, I mean, I'm just kind of, you know, circling around this idea. It's like an obsession. I don't know, you know, it has a lot to do with, you know, family, has a lot to do with, just struggling with all kinds of things.
Hmm. How do you write music? Do you come up with the poetry and then try and set it, or do you kind of vamp along and just talk to yourself and sing what comes out? Or?
I used to just kind of vamp along, and you know, there usually if I was sitting with the guitar and coming up with a couple chords, some phrase will come out along with the chord changes, and that will kind of, the two will kind of be born together. And then I can kind of sit down without the guitar and start to pen some lyrics around that phrase. Writing lyrics for me is definitely way more of a challenge than playing chords on the guitar. I guess because, you know, the guitar can always be out of tune. I can always blame the guitar for it not sounding right, but I can't say like, you know, that my pen was out of ink. You know, it's just, it's all up to me, and it's all kind of, the pressure's there when you're writing lyrics. I didn't think that lyrics were that important when I was in my early 20s, and so as you get older, you start listening to what people are saying in the music, and then you suddenly realize what a fool you've been that you said that in a song, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I really try to pay special attention to what I'm saying.
I almost wonder if that's the difference between, you're here playing just your acoustic guitar, but mm-hmm. the Damwells is a full rock band sound.
Yeah.
And do you find when you strip all that away, the lyrics need to say
yeah.
something? Or
oh, yeah. I mean, it's the curse of rock and roll is that, you know, when you're up there playing and there's all these people bashing away and strutting around and setting things on fire, who cares what you're talking about, you know? But when you're alone kind of just there with the guitar, you have no choice but to believe in what you're saying, because otherwise you won't remember it, you know, and then you'll be up there and turn to your wife and ask her what the next lyric is. I mean, I have that problem sometimes when I'm playing songs that are that I wrote, you know, a long time ago. You know, I keep saying a long time ago. I mean, I've only really been doing this for 10 years, so, you know, 7 years ago, hardly a long time ago. But, you know, there are songs that, definitely happened before I crossed, like, some kind of lyrical Rubicon, and I can't really feel connected to those songs, so I just have to memorize them, you know, like you would if you were trying to memorize an equation, and that's depressing, mm-hmm. you know. So with the new songs, you know, I slaved over these lyrics and the music, so I remember them.
Well, I'd love to hear another song, and
yeah.
we can talk a little bit more after that. You mentioned your wife, and she happens to be here in the
yes,
studio
she is.
With uh-huh. us. And Angela, hi.
Hello.
Thanks for coming in.
Hi.
And also Courtney from the Kaiser Cartel is here. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
What song would you like to do for us?
We're going
to
play a song from a record that came out in 2006 on Rounder Records. The record is Air Stereo, and the song is Golden Days.
On your mark, get ready, set, and run away for good. There's a bold and brighter light where my soul once stood. So fall apart, confetti, come on, cry right on my sleeve. And I am just a ghost of hearts that break bittersweet. Am I in tune? Yeah, can't hear much but the melody coming from you. Baby, please don't rush, keep the tempo slow and ooh, let me hear the words you say. Let's go and get tangled in chains of golden days. Counting down, T-minus 10, 9, wait, I still believe. There's a distance in your eyes, only mine can see. So leave the ground behind us, I'll be floating round your lips. I am just a host of arms, holding one fool's wish. Am I in tune? It can't hear much but the melody coming from you. Baby, please don't rush, keep the tempo slow and ooh, let me hear the words you say. Let's go and get tangled in chains of golden days. Of golden days. Yeah. Am I in tune? It can't hear much but the melody coming from you. Baby, please don't rush, keep the tempo slow and ooh, let me hear the words you say. Let's go and get tangled in chains of golden days. Am I in tune? It can't hear much but the melody coming from rush, keep the tempo slow and ooh, let me hear the words you say. Let's go and get tangled in chains of golden days. Let's go and get tangled in chains of golden days. Let's go and get tangled. tangled in chains of golden days.
Alex Deason with Golden Days, and that's off the album Air Stereo. That's on Rounder Records from 2006. I know the next album that you did, The Last Century, was in 2009, and that actually was given away for free through Paste Magazine. How did that come about?
Well, at the time, I was I had kind of walked away from music for about 2 years. I was kind of focusing on writing fiction and stuff like that. And I was applying to all these graduate programs, and I got in the University of Iowa, the Writer's Workshop. And so while I was there, I was focused, you know, exclusively on working on fiction. I was writing a collection of short stories and a book. So I didn't have time to tour, and I wasn't going to tour, but I had made this record. It was kind of like I kind of had made this record out of desperation. I didn't really have any record label anymore. Two of the original band members had left, and we weren't really sure, you know, what if we were going to survive or how the band was going to function. So my wife, you know, I hadn't really been playing music. My wife had said, you know, you should go record a record. You know, you have a bunch of songs. Why don't you just go make a record? And I just thought it was useless because there was no way that anyone was going to hear it because I didn't have a record label and I wasn't going to tour. And so this great friend of mine, Andrew Ratcliffe, who owns a studio in Oxford, Mississippi called Tweed Recording, just called me up and said, why don't you come down and make a record and we'll just do it for free. So I went down there. Angela came down there and we recorded a bunch of songs. And it seemed only logical that, you know, I mean, it wasn't my idea. You know, my manager, Wes Kidd, who's just been like kind of my go-to guy for a long time, just said, why don't we just give the record away for free? You know, I mean, you're not gonna tour, like I said. And so then Paste, you know, kind of jumped at the opportunity to put it, to kind of host it. And it was really cool. I mean, a lot of people downloaded that record, more people than had listened to any other Dan Wells record. So that was kind of, it was kind of like the record that I made to just kind of keep things going, you know?
One of the tracks on The Last Century that I like a lot is Soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And it has the line, can you shut up long enough to fall in love? Mm-hmm. Which just sounds like a piece of advice that I might want give one of my friends who just won't, like, they just won't stop analyzing the relationship long enough to enjoy it. Do you always write from your own perspective? Is that kind of where that song's coming from? Or
yeah, sometimes, you know, for sure. With that song, I think that, you know, I wrote that song while I was living in an apartment in Hollywood. I had just left Brooklyn, and it was like living out of a Hollywood exile. I couldn't live in Brooklyn anymore. And I was courting Angela at the time, and I was so afraid of, like, you know, what was going to happen. I had moved to this strange city, and I didn't really know anyone. I mean, I didn't know a soul in Los Angeles. And I was in this apartment by myself. She was at work, and I just thought, like, it wasn't really just the talking, but just the thinking and the analyzing and that kind of thing. So I guess I was kind of talking to myself, mm-hmm. You know.
Do you ever write songs from another person's perspective?
I write songs from a perspective that I imagine, but never from, like, imagined people.
Okay.
I know a lot of songwriters do that, and they do it really well. It's just not something I've ever been able to do well. I've tried to do it on a number of occasions, but, you know, it never felt right for me to say, like, you know, I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. It just didn't feel like, you know, when Johnny Cash does it, it's amazing. You know, he just becomes, like, this character, and I mean... You know, but I'm just not good at that. So I try to kind of, you know, play the border, kind of straddle the line between, you know, interpreted narrative of my own life and, you know, interpreted fictional narrative.
Okay. When did you first start writing songs?
I don't remember when I first, before I started playing guitar, you know, I just made up songs and...
When you were a little kid?
Yeah, when I was a little kid. My sister and I used to put on impromptu plays during the holidays and stuff like that. So we were always like, we had a very, very imaginary kind of world we lived in when we were kids. So I think that eventually when I picked up a guitar, I was able to funnel a lot of that, you know, imagination into songs.
Did you have a musical family growing up? Or was
Yeah, my mother was a performer and a singer, and she went to, she wasn't a singer actually, but she's probably mad at me that I outed her that she's not a singer, but she was an actress, and you know, she went to school, you know, studied theater. My father was an actor, studied theater, and, you know, so there was a lot of performance in my house. My father was definitely an amateur singer, you know, so yeah, it was in the family.
What kind of music were you listening to at that point
when I was younger?
Uh-huh.
You know, my sister listened to a lot of... My sister read Clan of the Cave Bear from cover to cover when she was like 11 years old. She's like a genius. So she was always listening to incredible stuff. She had... I remember she had a vinyl copy of The Replacements' Let It Be that I used to listen to, and she had a lot of great music. I mean, a lot of stuff like, you know, Bob Dylan, Van Morrison, you know, a lot of stuff like that. Definitely singer-songwriter type of stuff, mm-hmm. you know. And then, of course, you know, when Guns N' Roses put out Appetite for Destruction, that was all I listened to, you know, for like 2 years or something.
Entering the meaningless lyrics phase
exactly,
of your life.
Exactly.
Back to the songwriters eventually. That's good. So what's your, besides playing and writing your own music, what's your relationship to music these days? Do you go to shows? Do you listen to, pick up new CDs?
It's a very complicated relationship. I do listen to music, but I don't really listen to a lot of music that has been produced after 1979. Just kind of randomly. I just listen to a lot of the stuff that I grew up listening to. But, of course, I do listen to, like, a lot of really weird music, too.
What's weird
Well,
music?
My sister, when she was she went to school at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh, and there were all these bands that were kind of coming around at that time. And these were, like, indie rock bands, you know, before that became a genre. These were bands like Don Caballero and... Hurl and the Carl Hendricks Trio, bands that probably no one's ever heard of. So I listened to a lot of that stuff too. The Jesus Lizard, though they're not from Pittsburgh, was like, you know, I went through a punk rock phase, mm-hmm. you know, as everybody does. So, you know, I go back to that a lot too. I don't know if it's for nostalgia or for inspiration, but I do enjoy it, you know. And then as far as new bands, the only new bands that I know are the ones that I've toured with, mm-hmm. are the ones that I've kind of come across on recommendations by other musicians, and you know, I'm kind of discovering music again. I mean, I took off for about 2 years. I just didn't really bother with kind of being in music full time because I was at Iowa, and so now that I'm coming back to it, I definitely feel a passion for kind of discovering new music that I didn't feel before. I just picked up this record by Mike Viola called what's it called? Just Before Dark. There's some incredible songs in that record. And I felt for the first time listening to some of that stuff and a couple other records too that music had meaning again, you know.
Was it the lyrical content or the ensemble or what kind of spoke to you of that?
I mean, it's just both. I mean, Mike is he's pretty incredible as far as the crafting of the songs musically and lyrically. That record in particular just feels to me like it's a very kind of introspective private record. It's just him and a guitar and it's all live. And it's just really cool. It feels like you're kind of getting a little look into his life that mm-hmm. you don't get when there are drums and bass and guitar and stuff like that. When it's just him and an acoustic guitar, you really get a glimpse of someone. And that's how I always felt about Bob Dylan, you know, that you're getting a glimpse of what Bob Dylan wanted to show you, you know, but that was good enough for me, you know. And now I guess, you know, with Mike Viola and other artists, you know, that are making music like that, you know, I like that Bon Iver records. I mean, those records are great, too. I feel like you get it. That's the status quo now is kind of you have to be able to look into people's hearts who are making music because otherwise it's boring. You know what I mean?
To you, I mean, you know, Katy Perry does very well.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of pop music.
No, I know.
And I think it definitely is
a lot
case.
Of people eat at McDonald's.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly.
but I don't think that really measures, you know, kind of the aesthetic quality of our world. I mean, you know, there are a lot of people who make art and do things that people don't get to see, you know, in mass. But I don't think it matters, you know. I mean, if there's 20 people to play for or there's 20,000, you know, you still have to show them something that they haven't seen before.
Yeah.
And if, you know, some of them will walk away being having been moved and some of them will walk away, you know, drunk and going to get an STD.
Oh my goodness. Well, on that note, would you like to play us another song?
Yeah.
All right.
I will play that song soundtrack that you
great.
Talked about. She said you got nothing to prove, but you got something to lose, and that something is me. Got no reason to stay. You say you've been running away, but you run like a thief.
She wants you, she needs you, a soundtrack to bleed to. But can you shut up long enough to fall in love? She said, come on, just let me breathe. I'm tangled in all that you leave. Give me back to myself. You tried 1,001 times, but the lines were undone. Why not believe what you felt? She wants you, she needs you, a hurricane to live through. But can you shut up long enough to fall in love? Didn't you hear? There's a time and a place that I won't be going. Time won't erase all your fear. Yeah, you ought to know by now, there is no reason to lie, no reason to lie. Yeah, you ought to know by now. She wants you, she needs you, a soundtrack to bleed to. But can you shut up long enough to fall in love? She wants you, she needs you, a hurricane to live through. But can you shut up long enough to fall in love?
Alex Deason, thank you so much for playing that song. That's great.
Hey, no problem. Thank you.
Soundtrack from The Last Century. And, you know, you've had, over the course of your career, you've had albums that have come out in so many different ways, you know, on Epic Records, you know, big promotion behind it, and then, you know, Pace Magazine, and then you just did the individual crowd-supported model of getting funding for your latest record. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about because it's the holidays, I've been thinking and reading all these articles about like consumers and things like Groupon and things like that, where the consumer really drives how we, you know, because a piece of music, you can get a digital copy so easily. The music business is forced to give the consumer a good deal. With all these different models that you've experienced, do you think we're finally going to get to the point where the music industry is both a good deal for the entertainer and the person being entertained?
You know, it's a really good question. I mean, it's obviously something that you have to think about if you want to write songs and you want to make records. I think that what was shall never be again. Whatever the music industry was in the 80s and the 90s, and even before that in the 70s, in the 60s, I just don't think that will work anymore. I mean, you know, I remember when we first started making records, you know, the number one record on the Billboard charts of like, you know, 1998 or whatever, you know, I don't know what it was, but it definitely sold more than 14,000 copies the first week. And now, you know, you can sell 14,000 copies of a record in 1 week and that's number one. That's fine with me. If I sold 14,000 copies in a week, you know, I'd buy a boat or something. But that's not going to work for Katy Perry. That's not in her record label because they put too much money into that. You know, there's too much invested financially, you know, for them to be able to say, you know, okay, you know, we'll sell 14,000 records and that'll be fine. So the record industry is kind of like this giant dinosaur. And for it to be able to sustain itself, it has to consume and consume vast quantities. So it can't really make a move laterally. It can't make a move in one direction. It's just on this course. It's like, you know, a train on rails. And for them to adjust to how the music industry is changing, whatever the music industry is, it's just going to cost them more than they can afford. So I don't know if they're going to be able to survive. What they've tried to do now is do this thing where they offer artists 360 deals, which is, you know, typically when you sign to a major record label, they give you an advance. and then they own the masters of your record, probably in perpetuity. And then once you recoup all the money they've spent marketing you and whatever, which can be astronomical, you then get some money back from the sale of your record, which is usually nominal. But now they're trying to sign bands to deals where they say, okay, we're going to take not only the profit from your records, but also we're going to take profit of your merchandise, your show revenue, any other way that the band can create revenue, like licensing for television shows and stuff like that, syncs, they're going to take a piece of it. And for a record label, in my opinion, to take money for merchandise, that doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand why anybody would want to do that. The only way a band's going to make money if they're signed to a major record label and they're not selling 100,000 copies a week or whatever it is, the only way you're going to make money is by touring and by selling merchandise.
But so that's a good reason why you're not going that route anymore.
Right.
But so do you think, okay, so you're not doing that route. You do get to keep your merchandising money and you do get to keep the rights to your record and all of that. But mm-hmm. I mean, you do have another job, right?
No.
No, you
don't. Well, you know.
I thought you were teaching.
Well, I was teaching for 2 years while I was
okay.
at Iowa. But
okay.
yeah, no, you're right though. It's and because the devil's advocate that you're playing is one that should be brought up, which is, but what about bands that don't have any fans, that have no way of getting on the road, they can't afford to get it to buy a van, and it's expensive. It's more expensive to tour now than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, way more expensive. So how does a band that's starting out, how do they survive if they get offered this opportunity to sign to, one of the biggest record labels in the world, whatever record label that is? To which I say, you're putting your life in those people's hands. You know, it's not just your music, because if they sign you, and they decide not to put out your record, that record can stay on the shelf at Warner Brothers or Epic Records or wherever forever. And you'll never, ever get to release that record. Not only will you not get to release that record, depending on how your contract is set up, you also won't be able to re-record those songs and release them any other way. So, I mean, it's really risky to do that. But, the payoff can be huge.
And you said you signed with
Epic.
Just recently.
Oh, with Pledge.
Pledge Music.
Yeah.
And they're not going with that model. So.
No, it's just we licensed the record to them for 5 years.
Right. So hopefully we'll see more record companies kind of wising up and using models like that.
Yeah.
I looked at the webpage for Pledge Music, and it's really innovative how they're doing it, getting the fans to, donate, I don't know what it was, like $125 to go to one of your rehearsals or something like that.
Yeah.
And all kinds of little fan experiences that,
absolutely, yeah.
that maybe someone can understand how that would be worth their time and your time. And
yeah.
So hopefully it'll meet somewhere in the middle as we keep edging along.
I know. I'm always having these conversations with people about, like, where's the music? Where do you think the music industry is headed? And, I'm not in the music industry. You know what I mean? I got out of the music industry.
Okay.
So I just play music.
You just play music.
Yeah. And it's an industry, but I don't make a lot of money doing it. So I wouldn't call it an industry for me.
We'll call it music business.
Yeah. But it's not even, but even just to say it's a business feels like that's such a surrender. That's such a, just because you write songs and you tour and make records doesn't mean you're in the music business,
Okay.
The music business is something else. So I kind of just say, I do whatever I have to kind of make it so that people can hear the music that I'm making, so that I can have the experience to be able to go out and play music in front of people and make records. And if that's a business, then that's, I'll leave that to the bean counters. But for me, it's just music,
Yeah. Well, people can come and see you play coming up soon on December 18th, right?
Yeah, in Chicago at the Double Door. That'll be with the whole band and everything. Yeah.
Well, can we hear one more song
Absolutely.
Before you head out?
I'd love to. Thanks for having me on the show.
Of course.
This is great. I'm going to play another song from the new record. The song is called Werewolves.
Beats on the fault line of love and doubt and wasted time. But I'm not here to show you up, break you down, or change your mind. There's nothing we haven't burned, but still this fire makes no light and no heat. I have been around the world, riding on the edge of something, till the dawn was weak. darling, darling, stay a while, stay away from God and thieves. There is consolation in the human failure of our dreams. I'll come around the far side of hate and hurt and misery with my arms empty. They'll wait for you like soldiers at war, like the cross waited for Constantine. Come and let her hear the werewolves if she wants to. Howling at the moon, waiting for the sweet embrace of you. Come and let her steer against the tide with sad, slow tunes. She might have a way out of here. You've been spinning here a while, down among the city lights. You shuffle through the bright streets of St. Petersburg, summer white nights. I just want to hold you up, face pressed to the velvet sky, so you can hear heaven answer every question you've ever had, save the ones you wanted me to ask. Come and let her hear the werewolves if she wants to. The howling at the moon, waiting for the sweet embrace of you. Come and let us steer against the tide with sad, slow tunes. She might have a way out of here. Mm-hmm. She might have a love. Running away with the dust and the bones of the last crusade. I'm reaching across these oceans and fields with a silent sway. She is coming home on the last train from this fallen kingdom. Come and let her hear the werewolves if she wants to. Howling at the moon, waiting for the sweet embrace of you. Come and let us steer against the tide with sad, slow tunes. She might have a way out of here. Mm-hmm. She might have a love.
Alex Deason has been my guest here on Capital Americana with some lovely vocals from Angela Deason and Courtney Kaiser. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.